New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of the Street Alpha Podcast. I am your host, Tooks, and we are back in Florida with another episode. I might as well move out here with how many times I've come out here already. But we are at O-Star Motorsports in Sanford, Florida. And we're sitting with Fernando, which is the owner of O-Star, correct?
Yeah, so part owner, founder.
Part owner and founder. So if you guys don't know who he is, he has started with Hondas back in the day. He's an OG. We have an OG car guy, which you guys all love the OG car guys because they're full of knowledge and experience, and they have literally had to figure things out for us today. You know, you guys are the pioneers of everything. So we're going to learn a lot about how you, you know, came to where you are today, the Honda platform. You also were one of the first, or if not the first, in the nines back in 2011 with the DSM platform, correct?
Yeah, with the stock motor.
Stock motor.
Yeah, they ran nines before, but stock motor was a little harder.
4G63 guys, we have one here. We can talk about that as well. There was a video where he had a Civic Si, yeah, the B16 that raced a Supra and beat it back in, what was it?
Yeah, 2000? That was like 2004.
Yeah, 2004, which is crazy because I know there's some viral videos out there that were, you know, of any car that beat like a Ferrari or Exotic or a Supra, especially a Honda, was always a big deal. So let's give a round of applause for Fernando.
Thank you.
A little bit of a better intro.
A lot of people don't know me. I try not to be out there too much. Just the circle, I guess, that's around my Facebook, really.
Yeah, yeah. No, of course. I mean, it doesn't matter how you know, if you're a YouTuber, a lot of people don't really know, you know, some of these people that come on the podcast. So it's my job to kind of help people understand, you know, and kind of bring light to the person. So, we had a little conversation before about the earlier days, which I was super interested in because my earlier days were Hondas as well. So I know that's how you got your start into the car community, right?
Right. My first car was a 91 CRX. So
CRX.
It was just one of the, you know how you look at this one car and you're like, okay, that's one of my check boxes. I need to have one of these. So I had a black 91 SI. It was super.
What year was that?
That was in 97. I had just joined the Army. I saved every penny from basic training and then my AIT. And then when I got to my station, I saw the car pass around. I was like, man, that's a nice car. And then a few weeks into it, I saw a for sale sign. I was like, man, that's for sale. You know, it's not like now where, oh, let me see if it's a marketplace. You know, right. It was like the guy had a for sale sign inside the window. Mm-hmm. So I had to drive around the base to see where this guy worked. Yeah. And so I got the number. I called him up. He said he wanted $4,000. I was like, okay.
Was that like a lot of money? What was it?
Yeah, $4,000 was, you know, we're talking about it wasn't that old. It was 1997. The car was a 91. I don't even know what the original sticker was on that thing.
Yeah.
And I was 18, you know, so I had the $4,000, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. There's no, let me check what Kelley Blue Book is on this thing.
Right.
So, but yeah, man, the only downfall about that car is it was from Washington State. So I had no AC at all. Like, I didn't have any AC controls or no. It was like a lightweight edition.
Wait, so what does Washington State have to do with those
Well, cars? I guess the cars that got sold on the northern side of the states could come that way where it just didn't have AC, like the from factory.
Interesting.
I didn't even know it was a thing back then.
Especially in the country. Normally you would just think that they all sell them the same.
Right. I'm an island boy. I'm coming from Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. I joined the Army and then he said, oh, it doesn't have AC. No AC. Shoot. You know, I'm
coming from AC.
The eight. And we're in Georgia. You know, I was stationed in Georgia.
Right.
So, but I wanted the car so bad, I was like, all right, I don't care. I'll roll the windows down and I'll live with it.
Yeah.
And so I did.
So did you start doing any performance to that car, or was it just like a car to get around at the time?
That was the first car I ever put a wrench on, honestly.
Yeah.
I had no money because when I started in the military, I was a E1, you know, so a private.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like $800 a month that we used to make. So I couldn't really spend too much on it. The only good thing is the military pays for all your food and lodging. So the $800 was kind of for whatever.
Yeah.
So I remember I went through the magazine. I was like, all right, okay, this is the cheapest thing I could put on, but it might give me some gains. It was a Pacesetter header and a Pacesetter exhaust.
Pacesetter is the brand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pacesetter was a brand. And it was cheap. It's like $150 each. and it didn't come from China. I don't know. I don't think so. So, I put those on. And then I got a little bit more money, and I bought what was back then a DC Sports intake. So not more DC name
Sports
brand.
Yeah, I remember DC Sports. Yeah.
I spent maybe about two something on the on the intake, which it was just a short ram.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, man, that thing, I used to beat on it like there's no tomorrow.
Did you make any, like, did you see any significant gains from putting the intake on?
It was
on?
More of a
Sound?
Placebo effect, I think.
Okay. Yeah, you felt like you were going faster because you had it on?
This thing is flying now. Yeah, that's no so tuning, funny, but, no you know. Yeah, and there was a, luckily, by the base, there was an eighth mile. And so I used to go to the eighth mile every chance I got. And I would try to get my friends to go, but they weren't so car crazy like me. So, you know, they would go here and there, and I would just go by myself. And that's how it kind of started, really.
At that time, were there magazines that you were looking at to get inspiration?
Yeah. So as a young kid, I used to walk from my house to high school. And it was a hike. I mean, I had to walk like 2 or 3 miles, like 3 miles, I would say, every day. And my pops used to give me $3 a day for lunch. So, but in Puerto Rico, you know, lunch is provided free, unless you wanted to like buy a sandwich or some candy or whatever. So I used to save my $3 and I would buy every magazine. And you know, on my way to school, there's pharmacy. So I would stop at the pharmacy, wait for the, because, you know, you have to wait for them to come in.
Yeah.
So when they came in, I said, yep. Picked up my, I think it was Sport Compact magazine, Turbo magazine. What was the other one? Import Tuner back then. And I would just read and read and read and read as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, a high school kid. And read and read and read and read. So I had some knowledge, a general idea when I started messing with the CRX, but I had never actually been hands-on other than giving my dad a wrench to work on his charger. He had a 69 charger that but I was never passionate about the muscle car stuff. I was always intrigued by the imports, and more like a David versus Goliath type thing, you know what I mean? That's how I started to gain some knowledge into what works or what are the first modifications you do.
Right.
So I figure, well, let's do the intake and the exhaust and the header. And then back then you would read the magazine and they have a feature. So if this guy was featured, it would give the story of how the guy built it and whatever. But then at the end, it would say, you know, Christopher Johnson, 90 CRX. And then it would have the mods list.
Yeah.
So that was it right there. Oh, he ran 11s. Wait a minute. He's got this and this and this. So I'm going to do that.
Right.
And then, you know, you kind of trial and error.
Yeah. Did you understand the general concept of how motor works, though, at the time? Were the magazines giving you that, or you were just looking at people's
bills? I was still like a green pea. So I understood that you needed fuel, timing, and air for the combustion to make horsepower. But I wasn't quite knowledgeable yet.
Okay.
I still had so much to learn at that point. But I kept reading. And I think a lot of that reading helped me really understand better of the whys.
Yeah.
You know, why does this, is this necessary?
Mm-hmm.
Or why did they make this modification as opposed to this one? And in the beginning, I was young, so I was also into the aesthetics, which now I'm not so, it doesn't interest me as much as it did back then. But, you know, as a young kid, oh, the sound system or the wheels or the body, you know, body kits were big in the 90s and 2000s. So, but yeah, that's basically how I started to gain knowledge. And then trial and error, you know, start to put parts on. Now, you know, you can't use this with this car or you're going to have a hard time. The first time I put springs on a car, you know, I put the strut on the ground and held it with my foot to try to get the nut out.
Damn.
You know, there's no tools. Yeah. You know, I had a
spring compressor or anything. Huh?
Nothing. You know, just... I had a Snap-on toolbox that my girlfriend at the time bought for me for either Christmas or my birthday. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just worked off that toolbox. And if not, I call a friend. Hey, man, you got this type of tool.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it was painful. And if you've worked on a Honda before, you know that the bolts on the Honda come tight from factory. So, and I actually
never had a factory one to even know that.
Yeah, so, you know, I was, when I was 18, I was a buck 35, buck 40. You know, I wasn't strength ready. but no, it was a lot of fun to learn and progress.
So after the CRX, you know, I don't know how long you had that car for, but what was the next step up from that?
So the next car I bought was a 99 Civic Si when it just came out. It was the year 1999.
What color was it?
It was black.
Black. Okay.
It was black 99. I was stationed in 3rd Infantry, which is in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And the car was in South Carolina, over by the Marine base. And I drove over there. I called my pops and said, hey, man, you know, can you loan me the down payment and I'll pay you back? So he gave me, I think it was $1,000 or $1,500. Sticker price was $17,500. I paid this, you know, I said, all right, sign me up. I want this car.
$17,500 for a Honda Civic Si.
Yep.
Crazy. What are those going for now? They have to be.
I think if they're clean, they're up there. You know, they got to be in the teens.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Retail sticker, 17. Which, honestly, I don't know, for a Honda Civic back then, I mean, that was like the top model. Maybe it's probably pretty relative to what it is now, I guess, for an SI, what you would pay. Probably around 30,000 now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been,
okay,
you know, 20 sense. Plus years or
it's
whatnot.
Just it's just how rare that car probably is now to get a clean one.
Right.
You know, low miles.
Yeah, I like black and a lot of, you know, shirts, shoes, whatever. So black was the first thing I you know, when I saw it. I know the Electron Blue was available, but I was like, I really like the black one.
Okay.
So I got that. And that one, I was starting to make a little more money in the military. So I did it nice, what I thought was nice. Put some iBox springs right away. I put a Greddy, what was it called? I think it was Power Extreme, Greddy Power Extreme exhaust. Put a DC Sports header. Back then, I wanted to make the cover look, you know, JDM-ish. So I ordered the valve cover. Yeah. So I ordered a Type R valve cover from Japan, and it was only $150 OEM back then. But I remember like it was yesterday.
$150 for
OEM valve cover,
Which is red, right?
Yeah, it was red. The wheels had to be the next thing. And I put some racing hearts, which back then, if you had racing hearts, it was like, say, like HREs, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was like big boy status. And the car looked clean, super clean.
Yeah.
Super nice car, super clean. I think I messed it up when the whole white taillights or clear taillights came out. I put some clear taillights on.
And you were literally in the phase of, like, the body kits and the whole racer era.
Like, so I lived in... So I was in 3rd Infantry in Georgia.
Yeah.
But Savannah area. So closer to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Nopi thing started. You know, young kids, they won't know what Nopi was about. But Nopi was like a huge thing for us imports. They would throw these events mm-hmm. where it was like a big show, like a big car show where all the vendors, all the manufacturers would come down. It would be thousands of people at Atlanta Speedway.
Okay.
And it was like a sea of people. Like yeah. I would come in with my little Camelback and some drinks in the Camelback, and we'd just walk around and look at it. You know, it's one thing to look at the stuff in the magazine, but there's right. no internet. You know, there's internet, but there's no, like, you ain't gonna see these cars.
Yeah.
If you saw a Turbo Civic on the road in 2000, mm-hmm. you'd be like, holy shit, you know, this yeah. is, it's a Turbo Civic. You know, it just wasn't common.
Right.
So we would go to that show in Atlanta, and you would see like real deal JDM stuff, like a Civic Type R hatch mm-hmm. or an Integra Type R. Or you would see all these TRD cars. Remember right. the old MR2 when they had the TRD body kits, mm-hmm. the Supra TRD. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff back then. That you would see, but you only see it if you go to a show
right.
or if you read some magazines. It wasn't really something that, like today, where you could just hop on the internet and see whatever you want.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing for us. I went to that show a couple of years until I left the military.
And then, so you got a lot of inspiration for your build going to that show.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was roll camera, right? So I would take pictures, and then I would develop it, and then I look at the pictures, show my friends back yeah. back home, and you would get inspiration. Oh, look at this car. Oh, with these wheels. Oh, or look at this body kit. And then so I had the SI for a little bit. I put a body kit that.
Oh, so you did get
I ended up putting a body kit, which I regret, but
well, did you say that now because of or at the time?
After I put it on, I was like, man, I liked it when it was cleaner. I like the clean. I've always been a clean look guy, like stock, but it was so in.
Yeah.
That I did it, and I went with what was in at the time.
What but body kit was it?
It was a Wings West, which was big back then. Wings West body kit. It's called the Aggressor.
The Aggressor.
Yeah, the Aggressor. And it was like it looked like a happy face. but yeah, I went all out. I put the side skirts. I put the front bumper. I put the back bumper. I put the big spoiler.
You had to get the parts painted?
I had the color okay. match the front. I mean, not the front, but the whole body kit.
Yeah.
And I like to be a perfectionist. So the guy did a good job.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm the type that used to put a towel on the floor because I didn't want to get it. You know, okay. I was that guy.
Yeah, that's me too.
I've been able to make it better over the years. Yeah. Now I'm not so bad. But that's how I was. It was my first brand new car, Civic Si. Shoot. Hey, clean your shoes before you get in my car. You know, that guy.
Deep freak, yeah.
And, but yeah, I put the body kit and then I regretted it. And then shortly after I sold it to a guy in Atlanta. So that was my journey with that first SI.
Mm-hmm. So what was the Honda that you actually started racing with, where you actually started making right. a name for yourself right. and you started getting into the whole street racing thing?
So when my tour was over with the military, I had a couple of months of vacation.
Yeah.
And I used that to kind of scout areas where I wanted to move because I knew I wasn't going to re-sign up.
Right.
And so I went to Atlanta. And they had a job there, but I just wasn't my scene. I was like, this is not going to work for me. And so I've been to Orlando many times, and you know, when I had time off on the military. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take my chance in Orlando. Plus, yeah. my aunt lived here, and I was like, well, at least she's there. So I moved to Orlando, mm-hmm. and then I got a job at a Nissan dealership, and just trying to get a feel, okay, you know, let me just get this job and see, you know, something temporary, at least to get a couple bucks. And I did that, and then started learning more about the area.
Mm-hmm.
Found this shop, small shop, in the corner, in a corner close to where my apartment was. And I saw the JDM cars parked outside. I was like, oh man,
ooh,
this is it right here. So I I went in, I met the owner. His name's, everybody calls him Pops.
Yeah.
He's from Thailand, really cool dude, very knowledgeable. And he kind of took me under his wing. And I guess he saw the passion I had into cars.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get back into this Honda stuff. And so I bought a Civic Si, another 99, mm-hmm. but this time it was Electron Blue.
That's my favorite color.
Yeah. And this time it was Electron Blue. And then that one, it was the beginning of what, you know, what I am now. Yeah. And it was a B16 motor, built bottom end. You know,
there was bought it built already.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's a funny story because the car was at a dealership parked outside.
Yeah.
I saw it. I called Pops. I was like, hey, I saw this car over here by the dealership. It's trouble already and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they want, I can't remember, I think it was like $15,000 or something. I'm going to go check it out. And I went and I noticed it had all these things, but it was running like poop. You know, it was not running good. But it was tuning. And I knew just from the little bit that I learned from Pops, oh, yeah, there's an issue here. I'm sure we could fix it.
Yeah.
And so I talked to the sales manager. I said, hey, man, this thing is running like ass. I'll take it, but I ain't going to pay full price. So I called Pops and I said, hey, man, can you lend me some money so I can pick up this SI? I'll pay you back. And he was kind enough to hook me up. He lent me the money. I picked up the car and then it was on from there. At that point, I wasn't making much money. But that was around the time of 9/11.
2001, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was around the time of 9/11. Mm-hmm. They called me. The military called me back and said, hey, you know, I know, you know, you're already out, but we need you back. So they activated me. And then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to the sandbox across the sea. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll just leave the car and we'll get to it when we get back. And I get to the station and doing the in-processing and whatnot. And last day before we leave, they say, hey, order's changed. You guys are actually going to go to Cocoa Beach to guard the Air Force Base. I was like, oh.
Where's Cocoa Beach?
Cocoa Beach is right here.
It's in Florida.
Like, yeah, it's like 40 minutes away from here on the beach.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I was like, okay.
That worked out. Yeah.
So they shipped us over here, and we were working, I think it was like a 3-on, 4-off or 4-on, 3-off kind of schedule. So I would come to Orlando all the time, like if I just live here regular. But I had two places. I had a place over there and a place over here. But then I was making, you know, military money again. So I was like, okay, so now, we're doing this. So I started putting more money into the build, and I at that time made friends with the people at Central Florida Turbo.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were more into like the built motor turbo kits and whatnot. And Pop was more into like the JDM stuff, motor swaps, and that sort of thing. So I kind of gravitated towards CFT because I wanted to keep going faster.
Yeah.
And then Rolo, which was the owner, he could tune them and whatnot. So I was like, all right, cool. So now that it has a turbo kit, we kind of changed a couple of things around, and then Rolo tuned it. And I think back then it made like 550 or 600 wheel.
550.
Yeah. And we took it to the track. It ran a 10. And, you know, if you were in 10s back then, you were doing it. Then we did the street scene. We raced, you know, this guy on the street, that guy on the street. And then finally we did a call out to what was the fastest Supra at the time in Orlando. It was a black twin turbo Supra, single turbo. I can't remember what turbo it had, but I want to say it was one of those Greddy turbo kits, like the T88, I think it was called back then.
How were you guys doing callouts though back then?
Oh, well, there's no internet, right? I mean, there's internet, but it's very little car stuff going on the internet. So We would meet in the corner of downtown.
Okay.
And it was really funny because one corner was all the muscle car stuff, and then the other corner was the imports.
Imports.
And we would talk shit from one side of the street to the other, and do call outs. So my buddies are like, "Hey man, let's call out Troy. Let's call out Troy." And I was like, "Sure. You want to run the Civic? Okay. All right. It's done." I pull out the BP can. I put C16.
Yeah.
You know, there was no ethanol, anything. So yeah. I pull out the C16 in the middle of freaking downtown. All right, let's do this. And we went out on Mexico Road, and we made a run. And I think we started at third gear, but I want to say it was third gear.
Yeah.
And it's a B16, so my, you know, RPM was up there.
Gears are shorter. Yeah.
So we went on three. My buddies were recording, and I pulled maybe like six or seven cars on that Supra, which I didn't think it was gonna be like that, but it was like that. And then he filmed it, and then he this is a little editing thing at home, and he put it on early YouTube. Actually, no, it wasn't even on YouTube. It was on the CFT website, I want to say.
Wow.
But it went like, everybody knew about this freaking Civic.
Yeah.
Everybody knew about it. You seen that video? Oh, you're the guy in the that raced the Supra. It was like a big thing, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, those were my Honda days. Yeah.
So, what were some of the things that you had on the car that, you know, at that peak moment with the Supra that made it go that fast?
There weren't any proper sources to tune a car, right? Okay. We would have to kind of make it work. For example, you know, today you can buy a 4-bar map sensor, 3-bar map sensor from, say, Omni or Speed Factory.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, there was no map sensors. So you had to trick the stock map sensor to not make your car go run like poop or go limp.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So we would get these check valves that you use for fish tanks, and we would put a vacuum line from the stock map sensor and put these check valves in between so the air that it was seeing wasn't as much as it really should, you know. Okay. So and then it would work, but it wouldn't work every time. Like, it was kind of tricky. So that was one thing. And then fuel, we put what we think, you know. So I think when my car was making, at the beginnings of it, was making like 3-something to the wheel. And I had 370cc injectors. You know, it was RC injectors, 370cc. And then thank goodness for Vortec and their FMU, because it would as the car made boost, the regulator would push more fuel, and then it wouldn't lean out.
Okay.
So it was all mechanical. Like, it was very little tuning of sorts,
computer,
right?
Computer stuff, yeah.
And then you would take out the plugs. All right, let me see. Oh, they're kind of brown. Okay, I think we're good. If they look a little white, okay, we need to pull them off for you.
Yeah.
So back then you kind of played with those things. And then for timing, you would take timing, and then you would play around with the distributor to give it a little less or more. But you had to understand that that's how those things work. Like, too much timing is going to cause knock or the right amount of fuel or octane. So, and those things I just kind of learned as time passed, or I kept reading more or learning from older guys. But that's basically how that went.
How are you reading knock, though?
We weren't reading knock. We just knew.
Oh, you just knew?
By ear.
Okay. Also by ear.
Like, yeah. So if you, obviously, on a turbo car like that, if you do it by ear, it's too late probably. So, but if you know that if you put crappy gas on a car and you floor it on, say, a heavy gear.
Okay.
Like, say, if you go from first to, like, third and you floor it and it has crappy gas, it's going to go, click, 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 and that's knocking.
So you can physically hear it?
Oh, you can hear it. Yeah, damn. Some cars.
I thought it was just more of like certain frequencies that you can't hear when you're tuning.
No, I mean, nowadays tuning is more aggressive than what the cars used to be back in the day. Okay. You know, they ran richer back in the day. Mm-hmm. Now it's more fine tuned,
right,
from factory. So the knock is just going to pick up noise and, you know, do its thing nowadays, or even from back then. But there, I don't think many cars had knock sensors when I started.
Right.
Then when I think OBD2, mm-hmm, around OBD1, OBD2, then you started seeing knock sensors and whatnot.
Right.
But we just knew from the old school guys that say, hey, you know, check the plugs, you know, maybe put a couple of degrees back to, mm-hmm, to try to help, because anytime you push, you know, more power, you know, you might want to take back some. Or yeah, like if you ran nitrous, you know, okay, turn it all the way back.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But those were things that we used, and we used the Super AFC.
Okay.
That was like a little bit of trimming on the fuel.
Right.
That was a little bit around that time frame. And you know, you wire in your OBD, I mean your SAFC to the stock ECU. It kind of came in with a diagram, and you know, wire it up, see if it works. But there's no wide bands.
Yeah.
You know, there's no UAGL. So how do you know?
So
we just read it by the plugs. There was a gauge that was, I forgot what it was called. That's rich
crazy.
And lean gauge.
Yeah.
I think it was from Autometer. But that thing read like crap. By the time I read lean, you're out.
You're out. Yeah.
So we would just go off plugs, you know, just make a run, see if it misses. it was bad, man.
It's bad, but like that's the beauty of, like, yeah, you know, the come up and yeah, having to figure these things out. Because now, you know, with these newer cars, which you spoke about earlier, everything's pretty much set up for you. So you don't have to diagnose anything. You know, if there's an issue with your car, you drop it off the dealership, or you have a tuner or whatever, look at it. But back then, like, that's crazy for you to have to check plugs to see what's going on inside your motor, which is pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah, it helps you.
Yeah.
In today's age,
absolutely.
You know, just to look at things that you might not look at if you started working on this stuff,
mm-hmm,
you know, the last say 10 years.
Right.
So it's nice to have that background to give you a different perspective on certain problems that you want to, you know, find. But yeah, there was a lot of things that we used. I think I used, for ignition, we would use a crane cams box, and the crane cams box would give it more spark, because after a point, you know, you get spark blowout, and that's something that it was a new concept for me.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, I didn't know how you can add more spark to the mix, and, you know, I learned about the crane cams ignition box, and that's going to help. All I knew was, like, all right, let's put bigger wires. Maybe that will help. So I put the crane cams box, and then the crane cams box came with like a limiter.
Yeah.
So that was like, man, this is badass. So of course I put it to like 10 grand. but it worked like a charm. I mean, it did the job back then.
So that allowed you to create more spark, which would obviously
so
give you more
it would,
power.
It would help to be able to push more boost, more mm-hmm. fuel, and then you need to burn that fuel somehow. So, and you had to buy the, you know, either the crane cams or maybe like an MSD box. A lot of people use six ALs.
Yeah.
They look really old. Like look like they're from like
back
the 1950s. those were used often, or their coil upgrade was mm-hmm. used a lot back then. Little things like that, but if you're running turbo, you for sure had a FMU.
Okay.
You know, if you didn't want to blow it up, and then you were probably running either 370s or 440 cc. That was like, oh, you know, you're up there.
What's the FMU for those who don't understand what that is? I'm sure I don't know.
The FMU was just a regulator that raised fuel pressure by an input of pressure or boost pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So you route one of the boost lines or vacuum lines that can emit boost onto the FMU, and as the boost went in, mm-hmm. it would open up the diaphragm, allowing more fuel pressure. So in today's age, I think most cars run like at 43 PSI base pressure.
Okay.
So you could say bump it up to 60, mm-hmm. and, you know, sort of have more fuel if there's enough volume coming from the tank.
Mm-hmm.
So if we did that back then, yeah, we could adjust it, but then the whole thing will run rich. So it would sputter, it wouldn't clean up.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a very good method. So when Vortec came out with that regulator, it was perfect, because as boost rose, so did the fuel pressure.
Fuel pressure, right? So you
then
get, yeah,
and then the car doesn't run like you shit. Know, total crap.
Yeah.
So it cleaned up very good. So it was used for many years.
Wow. Did you guys get any inspiration from what the muscle car guys were doing?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. You know, and I think still today, you know, like for example, Hondas didn't use weights in the front for a very, very long time, and that's something that the V8s were doing long ago.
Yeah.
You know, and we've kind of picked up on that. But, you know, muscle cars and import guys were never really buddy-buddy. So it just took us a while to learn, because muscle cars had been around for so long.
Yeah.
And then imports was so new and fresh, and all the guys were green peas, most of them.
Right.
So it just took a while to get there. But a lot of the advances on the import side have come from muscle cars.
Even with boost, because that wasn't really a popular thing. Muscle car guys are more like NA.
Right, but the pro mods and the bigger boys were already running those type of setups, but it was more hush-hush information. Right. So you had to know a guy that knew a guy to try to get your program to get better.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that, but I mean, we have a lot of smart guys in the import scene, so
yeah,
it evolved quickly. I mean, it was really cool to see people back then, like say Stefan Babadakis,
mm-hmm.
or Kenny Tran, or Lisa Kubo from McLeod.
Yeah,
those were pioneers that kind of paved the way for us. And there were people I looked up to when I was coming up, because I would read the magazines and they're all over it.
They're all in it,
and
yeah.
And to me, they're my idols. You know, they were like, oh, man, this is cool. You know, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to. And a lot of their setups were already on the magazine, and you read it and it's like,
yeah,
all right, cool. I probably got to run this type of injector and this. So, you know, those were good times.
Did you get a lot of respect for beating the Supra in that race after that? I know you mentioned people were always talking about it, but like, do you think that kind of elevated your career to where you are today? That kind of got the start?
Yeah, I think it helps Central Florida Turbo a lot,
okay.
I want to say. Because back then, remember, I was still active because of the 9/11
right.
thing. So even if I wanted to, I couldn't start my own business. I had to deal with that until they said it's done. So I was just more a car guy helping CFT
shop out, right?
And I was putting all the money, but it doesn't matter, because it's, you know, they're helping me the tune. It was kind of like a give and take relationship, and I just wanted to go fast, really. But yeah, that video, it was like viral. What would you call viral today? It's everybody knew about that video. People in New York knew about that. Oh, this is the Civic that, you know. I remember a guy came from New York to Florida, and he was doing call outs at the meet.
Yeah,
I forgot his name. He was a Dominican guy from New York, and my buddy calls me up. I'm at home sleeping. He's like, "Hey man, this guy from New York here, that he wants to run whoever's fastest." I was like, "You sure?" "Yeah man, come down." I was like, "All right." I come down, meet at the 7-Eleven. Okay, and my car, I said, like, I like the stockish look.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had some wheels, but other than that, you could tell it was turbo, but, you know, it was pretty sleeper.
Yeah.
And we go out, and I pulled like 10 cars on. And so the word just kept, you know, it kept getting out there. And I think that everybody knew the blue Civic from CFT, the guy, the Civic that ran the Supra.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that I don't think a lot of people knew that was me.
Yeah.
Because I was not really, I've never really been too much of, you know,
in the public more so,
looking for fans or whatever. I was completely okay for CFT to benefit from that because I wanted them to grow and to help their business. They're my buddies. I didn't gain business from that, but later on it helped me because some people remembered about it. Obviously, I started my thing a couple of years later, so it wasn't as fresh.
This is all roll racing? No digs?
That was roll racing, yeah.
Okay. Did you do any dig racing with that car?
Yeah, I went to the local track, Orlando Speed World.
Okay.
And I ran there often, you know. And it was funny because, you know, V8s were the top dogs.
Yeah.
You know. And so at the track, you have, like, you know, the couple lanes, so the street cars and whatever. And if you ran, I think it was 12s or under, you could get on the fast lane. Mm. So I parked my little Civic with the slicks in the front. And they, you know, they look at me like I'm crazy. Like, you running that? That runs 12s? Like, yeah, on a good day. it was really fun because a lot of those guys didn't know what these Hondas were capable of.
Yeah.
They just didn't. And I'll go out there and run a 10-second pass in 2003, 2004. And it was like, man, that's fast. And then a lot of people would come and ask about the car and the different things. And it was really fun. It was really... I enjoyed it a lot, but I started going to college because I had the army money.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of my benefits from the military. I started going to college, and I was like, man, how can I make this passion of mine make me money? Like,
yeah.
How can I live off this? You know, I'm not looking to be rich, but I'd like to work on something that I like to do, and this is something I like to do. So how can I make a living? And so I had spare time when I was going to college, and I started looking into this eBay thing. And now we're, you know, we've moved on a couple of years. So Honda Tech existed. Okay. So now people knew me from the Civic, from Honda Tech, and this and that and whatever. Obviously, later on, I sold the Civic to CFT.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept it and kept that going. But now I had no car. I was going to college, you know, no race car, going to college. And I was like, man, I'm gonna start this eBay thing. This thing makes sense. You could sell used parts. I could sell new parts. You know, I know Pop Settle Version. I know CFT. Maybe they can sell me parts and I can sell them on eBay.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. And there weren't many vendors on eBay. So I was like, oh, I'll give it a shot. And that kind of started taking off little by little. You know, they didn't have so many rules like they do today. Today is a little harder to
a lot of regulations and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Into getting an account on eBay, and they just make it really hard for you to sell.
Yeah.
For somebody starting out.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it was kind of free for all.
Right.
So I started selling there and made a little money. And my buddy, Armando, he was a big DSM guy. He was like, big, like, I couldn't hear enough about these DSM. And so he's like, hey, let's buy a DSM. Why don't you buy a DSM? You know, they run with, you know, you don't have to put a ton of money in it.
Yeah.
And whatever. And I was like, well, I heard that DSMs are like mechanic cars. Like, you got to be on them all the time. I ain't trying to be on them all the time, you know. And so he was like, no, that's because they don't do it right. I was like, sure, okay. All right, let's give it a shot. So we found this car that was in, I think, in Fort Lauderdale or something. Super clean, champagne, Eclipse GSX. Had all the goodies. Had an FP turbo, Shep trans. It had a twin disc, which, you know, I never had a twin disc before.
Yeah,
exactly. And it had all the, it was a Quartermaster.
Quartermaster, yes.
It was a Quartermaster twin disc.
Right.
And it had all these goodies, but I think the guy was fed up with the car because he couldn't find the oil leak.
Ah.
So he was selling it cheap.
Yeah.
But the car was so clean that I couldn't figure out why he was selling it so cheap. I'm like,
did you guys have any shock tower rust on your on the cars out here or no? That's no. Just like a New York thing probably.
Yeah, right? That's an up north thing. Okay. That car was Florida car all its life.
But so okay. Yeah.
And it was super clean. It had like a little dent on the front fender, that was it. Super clean. It was the top model. So it had the leather and the sunroof and it was a nice car.
Yeah.
AC worked, everything worked. And but I took it for a spin around the block. It's like it runs fine. And transmission shifts good. Okay. He said the guy he was up front, he said, yeah, it has an oil leak, but I was like, oh, oil leak, I can, you know, I'm a tech, I can figure this out.
Yeah.
Paid him his money and we set out to go back to Orlando, and that car went through a quarter and a half of oil, 2.5 hours. Okay. Quarter and a half of oil. I'm like, what the hell is this oil going to? And it smokes, and I was like, man, but it runs fine.
Yeah.
It ran fine. So asked my buddy if I could put it on his lift on his shop. I put it up on the lift, started looking. I was like, oh, I know what it is. He forgot to put the, there's a bolt that goes in the back of those blocks that's for the balance shaft to lock the balance shaft. And maybe he just missed it.
Yeah.
And every time the motor would see pressure, it would spit out that hole.
Mm.
I plugged that thing up, filled it up with oil. Done. Good no to more go. Problems. Yeah, man. I started working on that car off of my my apartment. I lived in an apartment, and I would just work on at night because I didn't want to piss people off. So I would work at night in the parking lot, and we just kept upgrading it from there. I remember getting a JMF or JM Fabrications fuel cell.
Yeah.
That was a bolt-on. I was like, ah, it's a bolt-on. How hard could it be? Well, how hard could it be was that some of the bolts were rusted on the car. The car wasn't rusty, but some of those bolts got rusted. Oh, man, we were there for hours.
Damn.
Hours. And I have a picture of that somewhere saved where I'm, like, laying on the floor, you know, on the parking lot and wrenching on it. But we took that car to the local track, and it would go fast.
Yeah.
It was a car that was well put together. The stuff that we upgraded was nicely done. And we would go to the local tracks, and people start asking, hey, man, do you have a shop? Do you have a shop? It's like, no, I don't have a shop. I sell parts. And they, you know, some people buy parts.
Yeah.
But they kept asking about a shop so much that my buddy was like, hey, when are you going to open up a shop? And I'm like, bro, I'm not trying to open up a shop. Like, you have to get a lease for that.
Yeah.
You know, let's say I get a cheap shop. You know, back it's still gonna be like $800 a month.
Yeah.
What if I don't make the $800, and I'll be liable for that lease. I was like, I don't know, man. That's some scary stuff. He's like, do it. You're gonna be all right. Do it. You're gonna be all right. And then I was like, one day I'm like, all right, screw it. I heard so many people asking me if I have a shop. I was like, all right, it's gotta work.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then started working from there, doing a lot of. You know, small jobs or going to the track, picking up customers. Then I hired a kid. His name is Gene.
Mm-hmm.
I hired him. He's helping me out with the stuff online or picking up the phones. And I'm doing the wrenching. And then when I'm not wrenching, I'm in here doing the stuff. And we just kept working on the car, making it faster. Eventually, from the forums, he saw that everybody was pushing to see who could run nines on the stock bottom DSM. Yeah. Who can run nines on a stock bottom DSM? And I was like, impossible. You need rods, you know. And Mike Grisotti, a good friend of mine, he had a Red Talon that was immaculate, super clean car, and he was running low tens. And I kept seeing him. He was trying to push to go into the nines, and I was like, man. I think I can do that. Okay, so let's try. So we kept, you know, my buddy, I was lucky enough to be friends with CMB Tuning.
Okay.
He works for 316 Speed.
Yeah.
He tunes their Lambos and RX. He's an OG, but he's a Honda guy.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky enough to have him on my side, and he helped me with the tuning, and the car just kept going faster. Until eventually we did run nines, and it was like a big deal. You know, everybody was like, wow, yeah, car rental. Then was the thing where they didn't believe me that it was stock. So
of course.
Yeah, I was like, all right, sure, because I have so much to gain from this record.
Right.
At the time, was still pushing the car. The car ran down the track and it blew up. I took that opportunity to do my first kind of video. Okay. So I did like a, hey, you know, these, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, been saying that the car's not stock, but it is stock. And then I took to like a walkthrough of you know, opening up the car. Yeah. I showed that it was all factory, and then I was all over, you know, that was, and then
it was confirmed that you had the record.
Right. So that was the first major thing for me. I was like, oh man, I felt like I did something.
You felt accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I did something. It was really cool. The DSM community has always been super, you know, they've always been very supportive. I was lucky enough to go to the shootout, you know, many years ago.
Yeah.
And then I kept, you know, obviously after the first one, I was just kind of hooked and met a lot of people, you know, people like Devin Schultz.
Yeah.
Legend. John Shepard.
Another legend.
You know, Joe Bucci, which, you know, he just passed away. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
A lot of really cool people, really. And it was such a cool event that I didn't care. It was 16 hours. I wanted to go every year and meet and see my buddies. Right. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this Euro Wars thing, because I wanted to make something like that for this community, for the Euro community. And you know, a lot of the OGs, or a lot of the fast guys that are OGs had DSMs,
right,
or had Hondas in the past, so they can relate to me and our story, and they'll appreciate that sort of gathering, like the shootout has been,
right.
So yeah, that's kind of a little bit of the story of how
you got into it. So going back to the DSM stuff, right? And DSM is Diamond Star Motors, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you ever have any issues with crank walking on those cars, or a 7-bolt, six bolt?
Yeah, I encountered it. It not in the 6-bolt stuff. The 6-bolt stuff is has normally been
never seen meant. A 6-bolt crank walk.
Right. Okay. It can happen, but it's unlikely. You know, especially back then when people didn't used to have twin discs.
Yeah.
You know, they would use pressure plates that were very heavy. So they would pull a lot on that crankshaft whenever you,
right,
you know, you press the clutch in. So I would imagine that if the engine's dry, hasn't started, and you press on that clutch and then you're making pressure on it and it spins without, you know, much oil yet.
Yeah.
It could be an issue. It was just a common problem with the 7-bolt stuff. I think over the years, people started putting things into place like deactivating the clutch switch, so you just started without pressing the clutch.
Right.
Or you would put a stopper on the clutch pedal, under the clutch pedal, so you would only push it to where it's enough to open a diaphragm. And not put it. Okay. So little things here and there, right, to try to make it live. But yeah, it was a big thing back then. People had crank walk all the time. I mean, the DSMs had just a bad rap. Like, it was, if you had a DSM, you got to be a tech, because you're going to be working on it.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think that if you did the right things to it, it would be pretty reliable.
So just for the people, just to give more context, if it's not into the platform, from my understanding, the bolts is how many bolts on the flywheel, right?
Oh yeah. So what they call 6-bolt or 7-bolt is just the number of holes on the flywheel. So
right.
The 6-bolt, what's called a 6-bolt, is from the earlier DSMs with the pop-up lights. Those, I think it's 90 and 91 had the 6-bolt motors.
Yeah.
And then they switched it from 92 up for the 7-bolt,
right?
And then there's another variation, which would be like the 97 up, 97 to 99.
Yeah,
they did a different design on the block for the thrust bearing. So the thrust bearing was an issue.
Right.
Yeah. And I think Mitsubishi knew that. And then they changed the bearing for the with the thrust washer from being built into the bearing to standalone. So you get two
right.
half moons.
That hump on the hood, is that for the cam gears on yeah. the 2Gs?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The 1Gs didn't have that, did they?
Yeah. Some
they
yeah.
all had it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They all had
yeah.
it designed.
Yeah.
With the crank walking, because I know I mentioned that before, that's basically when the crankshaft is
right.
has more
so
play in it.
What crank walk is basically you get too much play on the crankshaft of how the crankshaft sits on the mains.
Right.
So you have to have a certain clearance, and that crankshaft shouldn't move.
Right.
But as it wears that bearing down, mm-hmm. it starts creating a gap in there, and then yeah. you know you'll know because you grab onto the damper and you pull it like this, and you feel that play.
Yeah.
You know, okay. You it's know, time. And then if you have sensors in the car, you might see some pressure drop or.
Mm.
But typically, the easiest way to know is that you pull on the damper, and you know, right. okay, it's got crank.
And you know.
Yep.
And that was one of the most common issues with the DSM.
Yeah, I think that and a lot of it didn't have a great ignition system.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the ignition system has always been an issue for those cars. So the first thing that you know you would do if you're making power
mm-hmm.
was switch the coils to what was back then the 300M coils. So they would take the Chrysler 300
yeah.
coils and they would use them on the DSM and rewire it, and that would take you a little bit further.
Right.
Then obviously people are going to keep pushing. So you keep pushing, and then now it needs an ignition
right.
box. So, and then, but yeah, I think those were the biggest problems. Obviously the transmission is a big part of the issues with those cars, but then John Shepard,
Shep, yeah.
he had Shep Trans I mean, if you're a DSM guy, you know
yeah.
who John Shepard is. I mean, he ran, I still can't believe how fast he ran. You know, he was just ahead of the times.
Yeah.
You know, he really was somebody to look up to.
Mm-hmm.
He was running in World Cup, in the early days of World Cup, with like big boy V8s. And here he is on this Talon that is running a 7-second pass.
Sheesh.
But imagine, no billet wheel turbos.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't a thing.
Right.
No Motec. You know, I'm sure he sprayed a crap ton of nitrous on it, but
right.
he had it figured out. And it's you know, he didn't have a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Like back then, you know, NHRA was doing the sport compact thing, and there was factory backing. You know, there were people with big money behind them,
yeah.
like Quaker State or say Sony Explode, or there was big money, and he just, it was his little trailer with his car. He was a one man show. So that to me was super impressive. So I always,
yes,
I've always had
insane.
Respect for him. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Him. He's one of the OGs that I respect for. Tony Paolo,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's a OG that has paved the way for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And he's still doing big things, so my hat's off to him.
Did you ever use a DSM link at all?
Yeah. So that car, that first 1G that I bought,
mm-hmm.
had DSM link.
Okay.
That's how we tuned it. It was kind of like a what you would call a S300,
right?
Maybe not even
that.
S300 was a lot more advanced,
right?
Than
not that advanced.
That yeah. the DSM link, but it did the job.
Yeah,
it did the job. Then eventually, I teamed up with Haltech, and Haltech helped me out a lot. They, you know, they were always there and never had a no. I think they're very supportive of the DSM community.
Yeah.
Devin, I know, has run Haltech for many, many years. I think they're just DSM fans.
Right, right. So you had a recent event that we are actually promoting.
Yes.
That actually, unfortunately, got rained out.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people were upset about that because some people drove down and they felt like you should have told them like ahead of time before them traveling down. So can you speak about what happened? And
I mean, to be honest, I handled it as best as I thought fit. Just having a racer mindset. Obviously, I'm a racer just like those guys. I know that, you know, it takes money, time off, mm-hmm. time away from the family when you go to these events. So it's just a very tough decision to make. And living in Florida, you just never know.
Yeah.
You know, you really, Florida is one of those states where it could be storming, lightning, and like 5 minutes later, it's like sunny.
Yeah.
So with that into consideration, it was like, okay, well, a lot of people want to see this event happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you do? I talked to the management at Speed Roll and I said, hey man, you know, it's not looking good for this weekend, but I know how the weather is here. So,
yeah.
And we kind of all joined heads and said, well, let's give it till Friday and see what happens. And we did, and it just didn't get better.
Yeah.
So my decision to cancel it on Friday midday was that, okay, well, I know a lot of the guys are here, or some of them are already here. There's Beamer Invasion going on tomorrow. I'm not gonna keep waiting or having them wait for me to make an announcement. At least if I call it now, you know, they can enjoy the event tomorrow and mm-hmm. still make a thing out of it. You know, obviously we're in Orlando, so there's things to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you brought the family, maybe you could, you know, use the weekend for that. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, talked to the track and I said, hey, if it clears up, you know, we can always have them do a test session or something. At least they'll be able to run the cars. But it just, I mean, it rained.
It was raining all.
It rained nonstop.
Weekend, yeah.
Which is another thing, right? If you cancel it too early and it's sunny, you're out.
Yeah.
If you cancel it too late and they're already here, you're out. So I just thought of it like I've been to plenty of events where it gets rained out. I've been the car that's going to race next.
Yeah.
And it rains.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of us have been there. So I'm not, you know, obviously I don't want guys to lose money or people that had Airbnbs that can't get their money back. So I would just say, this is how, you know, this is just how racing is. You know, you can't plan. You can plan everything except the weather.
Right.
And you have to be, it's a risk you have to take mm-hmm. when you decide to go far. Like I've gone on trips 18 hours to Ohio, like we were talking about, for a shootout. And it's rained, you know, and that's a long way. And I was a vendor, you know, also. So I'm paying for my team to go. I'm paying for myself, my car. You know, it's a lot of loss, but, you know, we make the best out of it. You know what I mean? At least know that your best interest is in my heart. I'm trying to make it to the, I'm trying to do the best I can. And this was something that I've just wanted to do for many years. And I'm just happy for the opportunity. It sucks, obviously, because I think that weekend would have been phenomenal. Man. I mean, everybody was here. It was gonna be
great. Energy was great too.
It was.
The Beamer Invasion. That was my first time going. But like the energy, you kind of knew that like if the event would have happened the next day, it would have been a great weekend.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was, you know, I've been working weeks.
Yeah.
On this, right? Trying to figure logistics, the trophies, the this or that, the talking to the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of time invested in it, and for it to get rained out, it's like, man, what a blow in the gut. But you know, what can I do other than roll with it? You know, we just, okay, well, we can't make it happen this weekend. I talked to the track. I said, well, listen, we're booked, but I can probably spare March 2nd mm-hmm. if you want to make it happen. So I was like, all right, let's, you know, I'm not going to shy away from trying to make it work, so let's do it. I think a lot of people will still go. I know that, of course, Texas 2K is around the corner, and that's a big thing for a lot of the major players. And, you know, I figured, okay, just think of it positive. Maybe some guys will use this weekend to test.
Right.
prior to the event next week. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of the, what I would say, regular Joes, like most of us guys, you know, aren't going to race at TX2K. Mm-hmm. So if they're local and they know they're not going to make that race and want to come to ours, sure. You know, but if, obviously, I understand that a lot of guys are going to go to that event. It's a great event. I you know, I've been to it, and I personally think it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to miss it. But yeah, we're going to make the most of it. But I think that a lot of people will still show up. It's funny because it showed a little rain for this weekend too. So I'm like, okay.
Damn.
You know, but it's not bad. I looked at the weather. It looks like it's going to rain in the evening time. Mm-hmm. So it should give us enough time to run and to have a good time.
I always wonder what happens with shows when things get canceled. A lot of the time it's not even, in New York at least, it's not even the weather. A lot of the times it's like permits. That's a big thing. What do you say to the people that travel for an event and they're there and it gets canceled? Like, do they deserve a refund, credit?
Well,
sometimes they don't say, you know, that they're not going to give them credit. They're going to give them refund or vice versa.
Well, I talked to the track. I think the fair thing to do was to offer a refund to anybody that can't make it. So at least they know that from our side, we want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So anybody that's messaged us through PM or any of the other avenues, we've given them the information of how to get a refund, and we've done those. I think it's the thing to do. For me, that, you know, we go to several events. I think the best way to plan is see what the refund policy is or the cancellation policy is. A lot of hotels will let you do up to 24 hours.
Okay.
Not all of them, but some of them will let you do that. So I would probably look at those things before I book.
Right.
The reality is you're going to get rained on sooner or later, or mm-hmm. something's going to get canceled sooner or later. And that's just how it is. You just, you know, just try to prepare the best way you can. But you keep that in mind, that it's a possibility.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend, like when I travel, is getting insurance or some type of protection, whether it's a flight or a hotel, just because, you know, if something happens or you get sick, God forbid, you can cancel 24 hours before and still get your money back. Or even if it's credit, you still have something.
Right. Like concerts like you said, flight tickets or any of those things. It's just good to look at what the refund policy is or cancellation policy. And I know with Airbnb, that can be tough. I know that it's nicer than a hotel, but maybe if you want to not risk your money, might be better to.
You're probably better off with the hotel, though, because I feel like anything that has to do with somebody renting out their personal stuff, it's kind of, they're always going to take the renter side, or the, you know, the person who's renting out the car or the Airbnb. Hotels are pretty much corporate, so
That's another thing.
You'll have a better shot of getting your money back there.
Right. If you complain enough, they'll probably say, "All right, you know."
Yeah.
Or we'll give you a credit, and then you can use it to another night or
one,
and which is essentially what you want to do anyway.
Right.
And
these are just ideas. I'm not saying that, you know, of course, if somebody in other situations with other events where they have people have trailered out, whatever it is, you know, I'm not saying that the event is not at fault. It's basically like, you know, just protection for yourself. It goes both ways.
We want to make this happen more than anybody.
Right.
You know, trust me.
Right.
All the weeks that go into planning and all the late nights and just trying to make it work for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's tough. So we want it to work more than anybody. And as a racer, you know, as a family man, as a racer, I understand, you know, a lot of the money that goes into these cars are sometimes things we can't even afford, but we want to do because we're passionate about it. So when somebody tells me, "Hey man, I lost out on my hotel," you know, I feel for them. You know, I don't want you to lose your money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to have to lose anything. I am 110% grateful that you're making this event and that you're supporting us. But if it risks, you know, your money, or, you know, don't, you know, maybe rethink it, you know, like if this is not the event or if it's risky and you don't want to lose that money, mm-hmm. you know, maybe next year, maybe, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. That goes along with, you know, just having a car in general.
But, you know, when you're young.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Like when I had the DSM, man, I did some crazy stuff. Like.
Yeah.
We know DSMs break.
All the time.
So, believe it or not, I used to put the jack in the trunk, the four slicks. I would drive to what was once Moroso.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2.5 hours, make some runs, and come home. And I was on stock axles, the stock CV axle, the stock drive shaft. Yeah. So sometimes the passion is just so much.
I can relate.
You just
yeah.
You believe in the magic,
right?
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right,
like
right.
you believe it's gonna be all fine and you're gonna be okay, and if not, we'll work it out.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's understandable. of course, that's always at the highest level. Also, when it comes to having an extra motor on the side, no, it's not. You know, it's not really like a common thing if you're passionate, but it's just a idea. Just make sure you have some backup or something.
Backup is always nice. Like the newer cars, what are you gonna do? You can't put them together in like you used to in the older cars.
Right.
So you almost, if you want to race competitively, you almost have to have, you know, a spare motor, a spare trans. And, you know, that's just how it is.
So the event's going to be March 2nd.
Yes.
And it's going to be from what time to what time? How do you buy your tickets?
So if you already bought your tickets, those are going to be obviously valid. So you will come in if you want on Friday. We're going to have the test and tune that Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So the track normally runs a test and tune that night anyway. So they said, okay, we'll make everybody's ticket valid. So if you're a spectator or if you're a racer, you can go in Friday night,
right.
Test. You can set up your, you know, you can bring your trailer, drop your trailer off. If you're a vendor, you could come early, set up the, you know, set up and all that and test. Then Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we will start opening the gates and letting everybody in and continue, you know, registration and start with qualifying. Now, anybody that comes on Friday, we can pre-register you. So if you could come in on Friday, the more of you that do that, the better, because then we can get started quicker
right.
on Saturday and kind of run through the event a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go through it. We'll try to do the three rounds of qualifying, and then we'll go into eliminations in the afternoon.
Nice.
So that's the plan. And then for the guys that are going to do the car show, you will set up, and then around 3:30, 4 o'clock, we'll do the announcing of who won each class of the car show. So it should be a fun.
So it's
time.
A car show slash racing event, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit of roll racing. You know, because that's always a request from most events nowadays. A little bit of roll racing, some drag racing, and then the car show. I thought the car show was a good thing to add, because if you're with the family, you know, especially on a Euro event where there's an opportunity to see like Porsches or Lamborghinis
mm-hmm.
or that sort of car in the car show, then maybe you could, you know, okay, let's stop watching some racing, take the kids or wife to look at these cars. It gives you something to do other than just sitting there waiting for races to go on and on.
Which I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, drag racing has very like traditional roots still today, where it's like, you know, you just watch the cars go on the strip, the seating is the same, you know, you got concession stands, but it's always nice to have something else going on outside that, you know, if your car is not racing, you can still look at other cars in the meantime.
I see it as a gathering of sorts, right? The racing is the plus,
right?
But really what you're doing is going to a place where like-minded individuals mm-hmm. are, and you talk amongst yourselves, you enjoy each other's company, you look at some fast cars. I mean, that's really what it's all about. The racing and records and all that is kind of a plus, right?
Yeah.
But the experience is what you take home,
right?
And you remember. So that's kind of what I want to make out of this event. Make it something that you look forward to going to every year, that you know your buddies from New York are coming down, and you're going to see cars that are like yours.
Yeah.
And you're going to see their different setups and take ideas or bounce stuff off each other. If you're a spectator, you'll get to see cars that you don't normally see at the track, because let's be real, you know, yeah, Porsches go to the track or R8s go to the track, but it's not as often as you like, and you're never going to see that many in one place and one day. So it's a good opportunity for you to, you know, just plan to make it a thing.
So yeah, guys, make sure you guys get your tickets for March 2nd. Where can we purchase?
You can go on the FOAT, FOAT.com, and just look for Eurowars. And
this time is yours.
Yeah, FOAT.com on Eurowars, and then you can purchase either a VIP ticket or a regular spectator ticket. And then that's it, man. We just hope to see you guys there. We're very thankful for all the support that everybody's given us, all the positive feedback. You know, obviously some of the guys got a little upset about the rain, but you know, we'll make the best out of it, and hopefully we'll have a good time.
Awesome. So what's next for you here at O-Star?
Well, right now we're working on this TTRS behind us. Mm-hmm. We're working together with a company called JDY Performance. They make full frame turbo kits. And for people that are not into that platform, full frame just means not a stock turbo or like a stockish, you know, turbo, not like a bolt-on,
right?
Like a full turbo kit. So we're putting a full turbo kit on that car. We're going to add a Datsun clutch, which Datsun is one of the sponsors for the event. And just make it faster. We're not trying to break any records with it. I just want to show that a full street trim car can run eights and be reliable, and you can do it.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a race car. And then we have the M3. That's my personal car. Mm-hmm. It's a G80 M3.
Right.
That one's same thing. The concept is basically make it as fast as we can reliably.
Right.
Hopefully just have a street car that runs eights and that you can take your kid to karate or go to the grocery store, mm-hmm. and it's reliable. And then we just picked up a new project, would be another Supra.
Okay.
That one is we're still brewing what's going to happen with that car, but the idea is probably going to be we're going to make a full race car out of it, or a purpose-built car. There's a manufacturer that wants to team up. I can't say names just yet. But it'll be something cool. It'll be a cool project to watch out for.
So running 8 seconds on these newer cars today, what do you prefer? Do you prefer an Audi or TTRS or the M3 G80 platform?
Man, I've had both, right?
Yeah.
And they're so different. You know, the G80 is definitely a great car. I would say that it's the best all around daily,
mm-hmm.
for somebody like me that has kids.
Yeah.
You know, that wants or that you want a little bit more space. Mm-hmm. But it's reliable. It makes power. You don't have to throw everything in the kitchen sink to make it fast. it's a car that you can make fairly fast with, you know, not a huge budget.
Right. Yeah.
And but it's still a sedan. You know, at the end of the day, it's a sedan. Is it a sports car? Sure. You know, if you consider a four-door a sports car, you know what I mean? I love the thing. But the feeling that I get when I drive the TTRS is completely different. You know, it feels like a sports car, even though it's a smaller compact car. It feels sporty.
Right.
It feels more nimble. You know, you almost feel the G's, even though it might be slower, it just feels different.
That's the launch control.
Yeah, and the launch control on it is great. The feeling is different because the G80 has a ZF, so automatic style transmission. Mm-hmm. This car is a DSG, so it feels more like a clutch.
Right.
You know, like, you know, you put it on the launch control, it does its thing, you let the brake out, and it just feels like a smooth transition.
Right.
Whereas the G80 is violent. Like it wants to take off.
Yeah.
So it's just two different things, but they're both phenomenal. they're just best platforms to get into, really,
yeah,
today, for the money.
And right.
You can't beat it. I have to pick the G80 only because, as a family man, it's what works best for me.
That's ideal. That makes sense.
I mean, like last week, you saw how many went eights. I mean, it was like a downpour of 8 second
back to back. Right?
So that should give the Audi community mm-hmm. some motivation,
right?
Because those cars are more than capable
yeah.
of doing the same thing. Now, are those guys, are the same amount of people in that community wanting to go that fast? You know, right. maybe not as many.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot more BMWs on the street than there are these
Absolutely.
Cars. Right. So I hope that we get more momentum on the Audi community.
Right.
Because I love the platform. I think it has a ton of potential. I think we can see some, a few 7 second cars soon. I know some guys on the platform that mm-hmm. they're there.
Yeah.
Just a couple more times out on the track and we might see some 7 second cars. So
Damn.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
That's exciting. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about before?
No, you know, one last thing I want to just touch is that I've been in this industry for many years, and some people or the younger guys might see me and see, you know, oh, well, you know, they have this huge shop and they work on all these nice cars, but yeah. it was a long, hard journey to get here. But I've helped a lot of guys along the way that at some point saw it can be done, right? It if you work hard enough, you can grow. I've seen guys start with a small shop or from home, and I've opened up a wholesale account only because I've been there.
Right.
I wish I would get that help. So I've opened them up, and you know, I've sold parts of them. I've seen them grow. That makes me feel like, man, this is worth it. I'm helping somebody else grow. All I want to say is, like, where I come from, you're not programmed to be successful, right? You're programmed to be part of the system of, you know, if you don't go to college, it's going to be hard for you to be successful,
right,
and that sort of thing. And a lot of that has a valid validation. But if you work hard at this, at something that you love, you eventually will be good at it. But you just got to be pushing. You can't stop. You know, and there's going to be some crap days that you're going to wish you never done this. But, you know, you go to sleep the next day, I guarantee you'll be better. You know, like, so just my thing is to anybody that likes this industry or that has a passion for something, whether it's podcast or whatever, keep working at it every single day and you will be better at it and you will be good. And you will be successful.
Yeah.
If anything, if this career has done anything for me that I could push on to somebody else, is that, you know.
Words of wisdom there from the OG himself. You guys heard it.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great, man. I really appreciate your hospitality.
Yeah.
I hope to see, you know, obviously your business continue to succeed and be successful. And hopefully Euro Drag Wars is also a smash after previous obviously reschedule.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I mean, and if it's not, there's always next year, you know.
Yeah, always next year. Yeah. Mm. So where can you tell the viewers where to find you, or the shop itself?
Oh,
on Instagram, social media platforms.
Yeah, we do a lot of BMW work, like the B58 platform, mm-hmm. S58 platform. We do a lot of Audi work, like the Daza platform, mainly RS5, RS6, and we provide the main part of our business is mainly parts. The shop side, even though it gets more attention, mm-hmm. is a smaller part of our business. We're mainly a parts distributor, reseller. So you can visit our website, ostarmotorsports.com, and you'll see some of the parts we sell.
Right.
There's also a link if you want to become a dealer. We can set you up through there. You can also make appointments if you wanted to us to work on your car. All can be done through there, but we also do a lot of social media. So our Facebook account, which is Ostar Motorsports, our Instagram account, Ostar Motorsports, you can go to either of those and PM or DM, and we'll be happy to help with anything. You know, our the one thing that you'll get here is that there's a lot of experience for many years. So, yes, we have some new guys sometimes on the phone, but they can always ask some of us older generation guys and help you get to wherever it is that you're trying to accomplish as far as your build or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. So definitely make sure you guys check out their business, and also make sure you guys purchase your tickets to Euro Drag Wars.
Shout out to my buddy Rodney that made this happen.
Yes. Oh, can't forget about Rodney. Yeah. Yes. He's the reason why I'm here. Yes. He was able to make this happen.
Yeah.
So shout out to you, Rodney. Appreciate you, bro. So yeah. Until next time, guys, make sure you guys like, share, comment, and subscribe. And also make sure you guys cop some merch as well. Link is below in the description. And we will also put the link for the ticket sales in the description as well, so you guys can purchase tickets there. So make sure you guys like, share, comment, subscribe. Catch you on the next one. Peace.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.